Malcolm Honlein is Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, joins us for the weekly update. Mr. Honlein, welcome back to JM in the AM.
Oh, thank you. After a very eventful night.
Oh, that's for sure. What do we know about the kidnapping of an Israeli soldier? What is the latest?
The IDF is indicating that this appears to be the case, that it was done. Hamas claims that it was done before the ceasefire went into effect. They're saying it's not true. It was done afterwards, and the ceasefire has now collapsed, not just because of that, because of a series of attacks that they engaged in. And the fighting now seems to be raging. There were missiles fired at Israel before the ceasefire collapsed, and we'll have to see now what will happen.
If the impression is that Israel's had an aggressive attitude, and whether we should put it that way or not is, you know, for another time, but let's say Israel has certainly been making a strong military statement over the last 24 days. This episode could really ramp things up. Do you agree with that?
It could ramp up the military action?
Yeah.
Well, Israel has demonstrated once again, this is now the sixth ceasefire that Israel accepted. Humanitarian ceasefires, Egyptian ceasefires, even the Hamas's own ceasefire, which they violated. Now this is the sixth ceasefire. And the onus being placed on Israel repeatedly by the international media in particular and some in the international community, by the way, not in the Arab world, where the onus is being placed largely on the on Hamas, and where you see editorials even in some papers, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, elsewhere, or UAE, coming out against Hamas and implicitly supporting Israel. Even in most Muslim countries, you don't see support for Hamas, and yet you see it in the European media and even in the American, much of the American media, let alone UNRWA and its sister organizations in the United Nations.
And specifically, if this is in fact the truth, and it seems it is, that an Israeli soldier has been kidnapped, can that isolated episode in and of itself increase things like crazy?
Yes. And it has. There's a very widespread search going on for the soldier right now. And the Israeli army is obviously always committed to bringing home everyone. So this alone will be an escalation for what's happening on the ground right now.
And we know this happened in southern Gaza. For those of us who are unfamiliar, is there much different between the different regions of Gaza when it comes to trying to destroy the tunnels and kill the terrorism infrastructure, or is it really just, you know, a duplicitous type of operation just in many different parts of the strip?
Well, duplicitous in the sense you mean that it's the same everywhere.
Yeah, basically you've right. got you know.
So the answer is not the same everywhere. The depth of the tunnel infrastructure, not only how deep it is, but the intensity of it varies from place to place. The element of surprise isn't there because Israel leaflets and Israel warns and Israel gives them advance notice to civilians to get out of areas where Hamas is firing from. And I think more and more people understand that the tunnels start in mosques. They start in people's homes. And I know there are a lot of people who ask the question, so we might as well preempt it, what's going through people's minds. Why didn't they know? Why didn't they see? You know, they begin underneath a bathroom sink. That's the opening into the tunnel. And to discover these, and many of them have multiple openings, the terrorists who got through this week came through a tunnel that had already been discovered by Israel, but they didn't get all of the branches of it, you know, leading into various parts of Israel. So near the Gaza border, within a mile or so of the Gaza border, you have those that lead into Israel. Then you have all the infrastructure under Gaza, which Israel's not even touching, where you have all of this network of underground facilities. And it's not just tunnels. They're facilities in a sense that you have rocket launchers, you have manufacturing capacity, storage, weapons depots, underground.
And that can be anywhere, north, south.
That can be virtually anywhere. And also, people don't know that a lot of the damage that's being done is being done by Hamas's own rockets. I saw a statement on Wednesday, I think, that 140 rockets were fired at Israel. 50 of them fell inside Gaza.
Hmm.
And that's about 10% overall of the rockets fired by Hamas misfired, landing in Gaza, including one of the M-75 rockets with a 100-kilogram warhead, exploded and killed at least 7 Palestinians. We saw the attack on the Shifa Hospital by one of their, and the Shanti refugee camp by missiles that they misfired. And nobody takes that into account. You don't hear UN officials and UNRWA officials citing it. And the facilities that were built within UN facilities, you know, 3 of the IDF soldiers killed this week was because an UNRWA clinic was booby-trapped. And they had sent in explosive sniffing dogs and a small robot to minimize damage to the structure, but explosives that were rigged to the building itself detonated and toppling part of the building on top of the soldiers, and another 15 were injured. This is a part of the story that people don't know, and it's so intensive that there are in one of the sweeps of a single street of 28 buildings, 19 were found to be booby-trapped.
Yeah. And this is what we said last week, that the enemy is a lot different than it used to be. You know, very clever, and the booby-trapping is one of the main reasons for that.
And some of the world sees it. The Canadian government is very clear and said no one likes to see the suffering, but it's the terrorists, Hamas, that has responsible and all their sister groups there. They initiate it, they continue it, and I don't understand why the rest of the world can't see with the same moral clarity. Thank God at least you see the statements by Hegel, by others, continuing that there has to be a disarmament of Hamas as part of any ceasefire.
By the way, you mentioned numbers before. I think I saw yesterday, since July 9th, we're now at 3,000 rockets into Israel, which is only 3 weeks. I think it was 3,000 since the 9th of July. And you just mentioned people making statements, coming out and understanding the situation. I've got to ask you this. Most people who spoke to me this week wanted me to lead with this question. What do you know about this conversation and transcript between the President of the United States and the Prime Minister of Israel? It keeps getting denied in terms of its authenticity, and then something comes up which makes you want to actually believe that transcript is authentic.
The transcript is not authentic. It doesn't mean that some of those things may not have been said in the course of the conversation, of the overall conversation, but the transcript itself, by both sides' admission, is not authentic.
There was a comment that the President of the United States got a little hot under the collar during that conversation, that there were actual threats being levied from Washington to the Prime Minister. Is that true?
I wasn't on the phone call, so I can't comment.
Well, you said that some aspects of this transcript or this...
My assessment is that some of the things were probably said. I don't know if the exact words were used, but some of the messages alluded to were probably said because we've heard it from other people in the administration.
So do you think that phone conversation was a lot different than ones that took place 2 or 3 weeks ago, and that the United States is really, and the President of the United States is losing patience with Israel in this situation?
Well, just look at his public statements. They indicate that he has called for immediate ceasefires. He's called for other immediate action. At the same time, the government of Israel has asked for the ceasefire, and that was Kerry's response this week, which was not wrong. And it said that they thought what they were doing was consistent with what Israel had asked for, which was an unconditional ceasefire, which would allow, at the same time, Israel to continue to go into the tunnels, which this ceasefire allowed. You know, they were going after, still dismantling the tunnels during the ceasefire as part of the agreement. And I think that there may have been some misunderstandings this week. It's certainly very unfortunate, especially in a time of war, but a time like this, that there be perceived to be at least the big separation between the United States and Israel. I don't think it's as big as some people try to make it or wanted to make it. I do think that there are always going to be tensions because they have different agendas. Any two countries have differing agendas, but the support for Israel and for Israel to do what it has to do to defend itself has been sustained completely, and we have not seen punishment with withholding things that we know of. Yesterday, the additional funding for Iron Dome was not forthcoming, but it wasn't because it was because of it being tied to other bills and not because of lack of support. And when they come back in September, I have no doubt that it will be passed. But, you know, Israel issues get caught up in the normal politics of between Republicans and Democrats.
Right, I understand that. We discussed this a little bit yesterday. Is it realistic to have a ceasefire when Israel continues to pursue the tunnel infrastructure? Is that possible and realistic to expect from the enemy that as Israel continues its pursuit of the tunnels and destroying them, that there could actually be peace, that the rockets could stop being shot?
Well, destroying the tunnels doesn't mean that anybody has to be hurt. It doesn't mean that Israel goes into additional territory. Israel maintains that corridor within the borders of Gaza, and the United States said that, recognized and others, that it needs to continue to take defensive measures. This is not an offensive act to destroy a tunnel that comes under the border into your territory. And I think most of the world on that score is not so bad with Israel. What Israel needs to do, they are, obviously they're never going to be a chorus for Israel's security,
right.
But the idea that tunnels, I think, shocks people, and people understand why Israel needs to do it, you know, and many of them were found to be inside mosques and other places. I think on that count, there hasn't been a problem. I do think that there were unfortunate exchanges and misunderstandings last weekend between the Secretary of State, the pictures, the optics of him with the Foreign Minister of Qatar and of Turkey, I think are very unfortunate when you see the reaction, not in Israel, I'm talking about in Egypt and Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states and many other places, where, including the PA, came out very strongly against it. So he managed to unite everybody. But the two parties that are closely associated with Hamas, and you saw again statements by Erdogan's guys talking about Hitler, talking about, you know, Israel in the most terrible ways and depicting what Israel's doing in horrific ways. And people feel that you should not be giving legitimacy to Turkey or to Qatar, which has been the major funder of Hamas till now. So I hope that issue, and you saw that the Prime Minister came out and said that the mockery of Kerry last weekend was unwarranted and unfortunate.
Right.
This is not a time when we should have a breach between the two. America has to be standing with Israel, has to make clear what the issues are. There's never been a clearer moral clarity, I think, in a war than in this one. We have to make the case, all of us. People who listen have to call them when the media keeps distorting and misrepresenting. I haven't seen one time a report saying how many kids died in Gaza building the terror tunnels. At least 167, they say, were killed just in the construction of these tunnels. I don't see them reacting when these horrific acts of incitement and the words of incitement are mouthed, whether it comes from Rouhani, who talked about the festering Zionist tumor again this week, and the nature of the violation of human rights and civil rights and the war crimes being committed by Hamas. They fired, as you noted, almost 3,000. It's about, after last night, it's probably over 2,900 mortars. And Israel has hit about 4,000 targets, which shows you how far the Hamas infrastructure goes. It's not because Israel is wantonly hitting places. They're firing and they're going after declared sites in which have been fired, sites where they know that there are weapons and where weapons have been fired from. And I think that there, you know, the confusion that has reigned in this, despite the live coverage of the presence of reporters, the ability through all of the new media to cover events, and yet they still are somehow able to manipulate. And it's not because Israel's PR is bad. Israel's PR has been good. They have put out information regularly. They have made things people available. Their spokespeople are as good as we've ever had. It's because you're facing a hostile media that is prepared to distort and misrepresent.
America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listeners-sponsored WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope. Rockland County at 91.9 on the FM dial and around the world on the web, jmam.org. Malcolm Honlein is with us, Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. Next Friday, we are broadcasting from Stay Road. We'll reconvene with the weekly update, please God, 2 weeks from today. You said a lot in there. Let me go back for a second to the Secretary of State. Is it any more complicated than he simply wanted Qatar and Turkey to be the, I don't know, co-sponsors of this truce? I mean, it seems so absurd. You would think that America would choose partners who have a little bit more affinity toward Israel and who Israel, you know, can live with a little more than those two?
Well, I think the thinking was that these are the two countries that have influence with Hamas, and if you want Hamas to come to the table, or at least to agree to a ceasefire, which, again, Israel wanted as well.
He needed them to bring them to the table.
He needed the people who had some leverage. Whether they ever exercised that leverage, we don't know. And we don't know what, I mean, their record till now has been quite the opposite of being those who advance.
Well, how do you react when you hear that IDF uniforms and ball bearings are in humanitarian aid shipments from Turkey to Gaza?
In the most recent ones that were just marbles that were found in them, which are used by them in the missiles. And that's, again, a point which, you know, you don't see the media telling what is in these missiles. You know why people have to wait after the siren? Because they're packed with ball bearings and shrapnel, and that stuff can circulate for a couple minutes after a missile hits. So they have to wait until all that stuff is settled,
right? So,
or hit on the, you know, hit in the air and it rains down.
Right. So those who are sending those to Gaza are the ones standing with the United States trying to negotiate a truce.
Right. And our hope is that very little is going to get through to Gaza, but this was humanitarian shipments.
Yeah, understood. And on the media side of things, which you were discussing, so when a rally in New York City, which, you know, proudly and shamefully, you know, there's always a double-edged sword, gets 10,000 people to come to New York City. I frankly was very proud of the thousands who came out. I was very disappointed by the thousands who didn't, but whatever. And there's no media coverage, or relatively no media coverage. So the reason is because we have bad PR departments at the top of the Jewish leadership, or we're simply being ignored by the media when it comes to rallying for Israel?
It's, you know, the media wants man-bites-dog story. When Jews come out in support of Israel...
Without arrests, and without violence, and without burning flags, and without demonstrations...
Why do they love to cover the stories of Hamas and not look at the Israeli victims? Why don't they... How many stories have you seen about what it's like, what the cost for Israel has been of this war? How many billions and billions of dollars? Because there has been limited loss of life of civilians. Now, we've lost, unfortunately, about 62 people altogether, most of them soldiers.
Right.
Think of all those families,
yeah,
who do not get coverage. But there's no blood and gore. They want to see missiles not being taken out in the sky, which was very interesting the first day, so that became an exciting thing, but the people got tired of it. But they can show blood and gore and tell these horror tales and exaggerate them. If you listen to NPR and others, how they can spend 10 minutes on a particular incident, and you don't get the real context. You don't get the real facts about what happened.
So when you rally in New York without flag burnings and without arrests and without, you know, civil disobedience and everything else, that nobody pays attention.
Well, I mean, I'm sure there was some attention, but we did in Washington, the National Assembly, Leadership Assembly. We got a lot of coverage, but mostly when somebody interrupted, one guy can interrupt Susan Rice for maybe 30 seconds, and that, of course, got covered. But her speech was very important, and because it addressed the controversy, so got a lot of coverage. I don't know what it would have been before. And, you know, and it applies to everything. When somebody is critical, when a foreign leader says something about Israel, you see the coverage. When the Danish prime minister refuses to sign the letter by the Nordic states, when the president of Paraguay refuses to sign, when the prime minister of Canada stands up and speaks, they don't get coverage. They don't get whoever supports Israel, and there's a lot more support. Then, you know, when the Hispanic community comes out in support of Israel, it gets no notice. When a group of Hispanic artists or actors says something against Israel, that gets coverage.
That's right.
And, you know, people say, why isn't the PR better? It's not because the PR isn't good. Believe me, if they knew one-tenth of what is being done and how much is being done around the clock, in creative ways, whether it's in the new media, the old media, every media, and you know, Israel's portrayed as being locked into a situation. It's not locked in. It's doing what has to do, and it's doing what it should do, and and it has to take the time until they complete it.
By the way, do you want to join me in expressing disappointment that there were not more thousands of people there in New York City on Monday?
First of all, we have to remember there were amazing events everywhere in the country, hundreds and hundreds of events. And in the New York area, dozens, maybe more, rallies and other things. So people, you know, felt that they've attended things. This was done in short notice, but I think having 10,000 people in August, when, you know, schools are closed, colleges are closed, other things where normally people who have are more readily available. And I'm not sure if it was 10,000 or 15,000. It should have been more, but I think that it was a very respectable showing. But frankly, if they had tripled the number, the media coverage would not have been different.
For 100,000, it might have been different.
For 100,000, you're right. They might have been a difference, but we'll see when that the time will come. But I think that the, you know, the effectiveness of the demonstrations, I know why people need it. I know why I need it and why we did this assembly, which brought all the leadership of Congress together, brought others, and we made this real strong show of unity. At the same time, we're trying to deal with the facts. We're trying to counter all of these mistaken images. We're going after the companies that are being threatened by boycott, which should be remembered. And by the way, this time, and I know this is an issue you and I have discussed many times, the Haredi community in New York has responded, I think, more. And there have been more tefillah gatherings, tehillim gatherings. And you saw that the spokesman for Ger in Israel said, when the country needs to be defended, then it is not appropriate for yeshiva students to go on holiday. And they canceled the vacations for the yeshiva guys.
Yeah, there are four Hasidic groups that said they'll remain open during Ben Azmanim. And now we're waiting for a decision to see if the other mainstream yeshivas in Israel are going to follow suit. And frankly, I think the yeshivas here as well should consider that. But yeah, accentuate the positive. It was amazing to see that report. And we thank those who implement their own strategy. You and I have discussed many times, every strategy is important. If you believe in the strategy, which we do, that Torah study is key to our victory and to the future of the Jewish people, then yes, this is certainly the appropriate move.
And when people see something, you know, the reports now that the White House ascribe responsibility for the UNRWA bombing to Israel, when they see something that's wrong, find ways, write the White House, let them know what you think, call talk shows, write letters to editors, support, you know, get hold of your member of Congress, let's hear the statements. I mean, there have been many resolutions introduced this week, at least four, one on the SPA, which is the Strategic Partnership Act, which makes Israel puts it in a special category, which has all sorts of benefits. You have the money for Iron Dome funding, which will not get through. As you know, the Senate went on vacation late last night, the recess until September.
But you're, I mean,
and between now and November, Congress, I think, is in session all of 12 days.
You seem to indicate, though, in September it will pass.
Yes. I mean, the support is there. The numbers.
So the reason I say it like that is because on social media, there's some people panicking that everyone's got to, you know, call their senator and you know, and beg to make sure that the funding comes through. It's not as desperate a situation as some people are describing.
But they should hear. And now members of Congress are home. And my point is that they should visit them or invite them to synagogues, communities, and ask them for their analysis, what's going on. Ask if they're going to visit Israel. There are people working on it. I know Elliot Engel, others who've been amazing in all of this. Peter King from the New York area. Most of the people, Steve Israel is leading a group. Chuck Schumer, others have been really remarkable. Gillibrand introduced a resolution with Ted Cruz against Hamas earlier this week. So people have been doing it. Doesn't all get a lot of coverage, but there's been a lot of activity. And but we have to press them to see who is doing and who isn't doing, and making sure that in September all these things will be resolved. Israel has been allowed to take weapons from the prepositioned arms in Sinai. And the best line I heard was when some reporter was questioning, I think somebody from the Defense Department, and they said, well, the stuff is getting old anyway, we would have to replace it, whatever. But the fact is, and that's when people who say, why don't you go all out on Israel? Why don't you destroy the administration? Why don't you declare everybody anti-Semitic? Because the United States-Israel relationship is so fundamentally important for Israel's security, as it is for America's security, that you can't just go based on emotions. You got to think through when, what you do, how you do it. That's why you see the prime minister reacting the way he does, and people sometimes mock. I think it's for his domestic reasons. No, there are real practical reasons, and we have to use our brains, not just our hearts or our guts, to determine what we do.
Are there a lot of military experts in our community, Malcolm?
There are a lot of generals. I must say I'm deeply impressed with how many West Point graduates we must have.
By the way, I have a new policy, which I think you'll appreciate. In our neighborhood, we have a bunch of parents whose sons are in Gaza right now. And the policy is, if a parent of a soldier is in the room, there is no discussion of the military policy. Because I can just imagine how they roll their eyes when they hear people like me making suggestions of what Israel should or should not do. And, of course, it's their sons who are putting their lives on the line. You know?
By the way, you raise such an important point. Last night, till very, very late, I was on the phone with families who have kids in Gaza today. And people forget how many Americans who have gone on Aliyah are being called up. I spoke to somebody last night who has three sons in the Army right now.
Wow.
In different places, but two, one near Gaza, one in Gaza. And, you know, we should reach out to them. People should understand what they're going through, the anxiety of what this means, and to be supportive. We have to be supportive of our troops, although there are a lot of campaigns that are not legitimate, you know, raising money for yarmulkes and tzitzis, you know, Iron Dome yarmulkes are a good idea, but anything short of that, Friends of the IDF is carrying the army was much better prepared. They had vests for everybody going in. That doesn't mean that every campaign is not legitimate. You know that yesterday I saw a statistic that the Israelis provided 30,000 meals a day for soldiers in Gaza. We don't even realize that they can go to a war that you drive to. And I know my friend Mati Fried at the Biker Bezos Holim, they go down every day with food, Hasidic guys, and bring stuff to the soldiers.
Wow.
And it's very meaningful to them because it supplements what they get or they don't get, and not because the army wasn't prepared or they don't have everything they need. Thank God this time they do.
Unbelievable. Couple of other things. When we hear about 16,000 more reservists being called up, and I think this was just before the ceasefire that never happened. I mean, should we, on the surface, assume that Israel is ready to, you know, increase the intensity in Gaza, or a big call-up is not always does not always translate into that? It could just be a precaution or some type of strategic planning in case of some type of turn in this whole episode.
Well, I think all of those things are factors. Also, you need to give relief to guys who have, some of them have been a month in Gaza.
Good point.
Weeks, and more. So you need to get them relief. So bringing up people is important. I think one of the things they should do is not keep them so near the border because they become easier targets there. But so that's one. Two, I think it is preparation that people have to be ready because they are talking about expanding the action inside Gaza, because what they're finding is that these tunnels and the launchers and other things extend throughout Gaza. And if they're really going to put an end to the attacks, it's not going to come because Hamas is going to voluntarily dismantle them. We know that. You see it. You see that in the constant violations, even of their own ceasefires. So Israel may feel the need to be able to go into a broader area. People ask questions, why weren't they more aggressive in the first days? Why weren't they? You know what? Those are all things that we can analyze later on.
Right.
I'm not a general. I don't know. I don't think I know better than they do. They know all of the things that we suggest as well. But, I mean, I wish the stories of really what's going on. You know that Hamas steals the UN food coupons so that they don't get distributed to the people, but they give it to their own people, to their soldiers and others, because they do not have the funding. They are not doing well. And, you know, we saw the story this week how Al-Qaeda is being funded because of the ransoms they collect each year. I think $66 million last year alone paid to them, which they use then for the terrorist activities. And they're kidnapping people. And how many of these stories have you seen? How many times do this, there's a media report on it, yep, assuming after a guy is released?
By the way, the identification of the soldier has been released. Hadar Golden, Second Lieutenant Hadar Golden, 23 years old, from Kfar Saba, has been named as the IDF soldier presumed to be abducted by Hamas. We pray for him. 23 years old, Malcolm, and he is the latest kidnapping victim, and who knows where this is going to go now.
I don't know how anybody can look at the pictures of these young guys who've been killed, the soldiers, and because they're soldiers, somehow it's supposed to denude it of its the sentiment and the, you know, okay, they're soldiers, that's what they're supposed to die. And media, you see how constantly the leftist-oriented media, others, say 23 soldiers, 60 soldiers, and 1,000 civilians, children, other things. How about all the children in Israel who have been affected? Where do you see stories about telling how many of them live underground for all of this time? All the communities near Gaza, let alone even into Tel Aviv and elsewhere, and everybody who's been there, and you will see it next week when you're there again. And again, I urge people, visit Israel. It's so important.
Everybody
who comes back says they come back on such a high, they see how important it was, how they made a contribution by going, just wander around, let alone visit the soldiers in hospitals or the families, and there's so much good you can do with it.
Every family and business in Israel is in turmoil somehow, whether it's the call-ups, the reserves, people in the army, business having to stop.
Business is not coming.
People in the tourism industry.
And all these things, which can only be countered by our being assertive. And when we read about a company, and we are going to put out information soon, we're finished, companies that we have to support, who stood by Israel despite the campaigns. But I can tell you that boards of at least one or two major companies, are reevaluating their relationship because of some of these activities. And some of them, including the picketing at our office and elsewhere, are done by misguided Jews, young Jews, who don't have a clue what they're saying and what they're arguing, what they're protesting, but make headlines and make news.
Oh, no question about it. Finally, Europe. You have to, with everything going on, and we see that almost so many countries in Europe have some type of, the Jewish community, each of those countries have some type of situation going on at the moment. You did see that there were thousands who took to the streets in Europe in pro Israel rallies at the end of this week. It took some courage for people to get out to the streets in Europe and do that.
Yes, especially because they have very violent anti-Israel protests, and when they spot pro-Israel protests, they harass people, and the police have to do a better job. Obviously, France has been primary in it, but it's true in the Scandinavian countries. It's true in others. Again, that's why I cited the Danish Prime Minister's refusal to sign a letter that from the Nordic social democratic leaders condemning Israel's attacks, etc. So you had party leaders in Norway, Sweden, Finland, Iceland signed this, where they condemn Israel's use of disproportionate force. I mean, this is one of the big jokes of this war, not funny jokes, but how the word disproportionate has taken on a whole new significance when the proportionality had nothing to do with the number of victims. It had to do about the significance of the amount of force used and the significance of a site that's selected. Now, these sites, we know, are significant, every one of them, and every one of them is important in terms of the carrying out of terror. But you don't see any of them doing resolutions saying yesterday in Israel, 158 trucks were scheduled to cross, but they couldn't because of the security situation. But 30 truckloads of food with 621 tons of food, 80 tons of agricultural supplies and additional trucks, 7 trucks carrying 44 tons of medicine and medical supplies, 4 trucks carrying 25 tons of humanitarian supplies. One day. How many times have you read it, despite the fact they're firing, and including last night, they fired on some of the crossings which are opened in order to benefit them. And they are preventing people from coming for Palestinians who come from Gaza quietly every week for treatment in Israel. Now Hamas is preventing them, and then they're going to blame Israel and say Israel isn't. What other country set up a field hospital at its enemy's crossing to treat their people? And these stories get no attention.
Oh, that's for sure. Is there a particular country in Europe that you could point to right now unlike France, which we've seen a deterioration, and, you know, we've been talking about it for months and years, where you would have said to yourself, I don't know, a few weeks ago, that you would go visit and be openly Jewish, so to speak, but today you'd consider, not I don't want to talk about your courageous, I'm saying in general, where Jews would be, you know, relatively uncomfortable in that type of situation. Is there any country in Europe where it has switched dramatically in a short period of time?
You mean deteriorated dramatically?
Yeah, like, you know, really quickly, where a few weeks ago you would have told the Jewish group, go, enjoy, it's the greatest place to go tour, and now you would hesitate to, you know, to even suggest that they take a trip there.
I would hesitate many places. People tell me Italy is relatively safe. My own kids were there, but I do not suggest that you go anywhere in Europe with the yarmulke on, because you never know, and there are incidents everywhere and often. France, certainly. Great Britain has had a lot in London, but we've had them in L.A., in Chicago, in Boston, here in New York as well.
So we don't have to turn to Europe for this.
So we don't have to just go to Europe. And I think in Canada as well we've had incidents. So I can't tell you right now of a country in Europe that I would say where it's safe. In Berlin, they tell you not to wear anything visibly Jewish, even though the government has been really supportive. And by the way, the government of France, under Valls, whose wife is Jewish and has been very outspoken, and I spoke to the head of the French Jewish community, I speak to them regularly, told me that the government has been supportive and has been working on it. But, you know, you're dealing with demographic realities of the number of people, which I spoke about here with you 10 years ago, and we kept warning, and much to the chagrin of the people in Europe, and I kept saying, you got to wake up, you got to look at the realities. There's no way, it's not a question just of who it is, it's a question of the numbers. The demographic imbalances, the fact of the 75% of Muslims being under 25, the birth rate being double that of Europeans, etc. Those were all realities, and now we're seeing the price and the radicalization that's taking place, let alone the return of the thousands who have started, some of whom have started to come back, as we saw in the attack in Brussels, who are trained in Syria,
yeah,
and who have been fighting, and who are killers.
The handwriting's on the wall, and like you just said, you don't have to turn to Europe to see it. Hopefully everybody will open up their eyes and realize the future of the Jewish peoples in the state of Israel, no matter what the situation is there.
That is true, but we have to recognize in America the law enforcement, the governments are supportive and fight anti-Semitism and do not want to tolerate this. There are times when they flirt with it. There have been incidents where we were disappointed with the reaction and responses.
Right. You're
by and large, you got to acknowledge it.
You're 100% right, and the Hakaras HaTov, the appreciation is there. You also know of many instances in history, including modern Jewish history, where things changed very quickly.
Very quickly, and again, you have to look at demographic realities, wherever people are and the political trends. We see on the left great diminution relative to the right of support, where you might get 70%+ on the right, or more conservative side, I should say, leaning down towards the left when you get even numbers or sometimes even worse. But by and large, the American people remain remarkably supportive of Israel. Our elected officials, the members of Congress, have been amazing. That's why you got to thank them. You got to encourage them. You got to, those who haven't done enough, be held to account. Ask them what did they vote for, what did they support, and what did they introduce. What measures have they taken beyond just voting the right way? And you will be surprised sometimes by the response.
Well, Malcolm, thank you so much. We'll speak in 2 weeks. Have a wonderful Shabbos.
Have a good Shabbos. And people can be positive and remember that we will get over this too.
That's true. That we know. That we know if we look at our background in history. Friday morning, JM in the AM, 27 minutes after 8 o'clock. My thanks to Malcolm Honlein, Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. Next Friday in Stay Road, 2 weeks from today, we'll reconvene with a weekly update and discuss the news of the week in depth. Someone has posted, and I hope this is accurate, because that the name of the Hebrew name for prayers for Hadar Golden, second Lieutenant Hadar Golden, is Hadar Ben Chedva Lea. Hadar Ben Chedva Lea. And of course, we pray for him, and we hope that he's returned safely to Israel very soon. I'm sure his IDF brethren are searching for him as we speak with great intensity.